full house here today. I'm going to call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that the time is currently 9:05 a.m. on Wednesday, January 22nd, 2020. And present today, we've got a full house, Representative Knopp, Representative LeBon, Representative Tilton, Representative Carpenter, Vice Chair Ortiz, Co-Chair Johnston, Representative Sullivan Leonard, Representative Josephson, Representative Wool, Representative Merrick, and myself, Co-Chair Foster. I see a few legislators in the audience here. We've got Representative Hannon, and is there anybody else? I don't see anybody. So with that, as we start, please remember to mute your cell phones. And I'd like to welcome everyone back. We're going to jump right into working on building our FY21 budget, and subcommittees have already fired up with the first one, first few, I think, occurring yesterday. And so with that, today we will get a budget overview from Legislative Finance. Tomorrow we'll hear a revenue forecast from DOR and a production forecast from DNR. Was that right? Tomorrow we're going to hear a revenue forecast and then production on Friday. I'm sorry. Those are both happening tomorrow. And then on Friday we'll get a budget overview from OMB. And so if Rob Carpenter, I believe you're in the room here. There you are, front and center. Lacey Sanders and Alexi Painter, if you could all please come to the table and introduce yourselves for the record. Since we do have multiple voices, if you could please identify yourself before answering questions, and this will make it easier on the recorders in the future. So with that, looks like we're all set, so please begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Rob Carpenter with Legislative Finance. I'm joined by two of my senior-level colleagues, Lacey Sanders and Alexi Painter. Today we're going to provide you a fiscal overview and kind of the state of the budget. Between the three of us, there shouldn't be any questions we can't answer in theory. We have some new technology here I haven't used much, so hopefully it goes well. I have a laser pointer. If you're ready, I can begin, Mr. Chairman. Okay, so today we are going to cover four areas. Where have we been last session? Where are we now? And where are we going? Before we get started, I want to point out that this presentation is entirely focusing on unrestricted general funds. And the question often arises, why do we focus on UGF? It was what we call it for short. General funds are typically the focus of most state legislatures when they're trying to balance their budget. Specifically for Alaska, we have termed it unrestricted general funds, and we do that basically for the namesake in that these UGF revenues can be used for any purpose for appropriation. The non-UGF funding sources tend to require fewer annual decisions. These are typically guided by statute, the Constitution, or some contractual obligation or the federal government. And they are rarely get out of balance. This is because the expenditures are controlled by the receipts behind them and or a fund balance. And on our fiscal summary that we produce, we equate them to revenue, the appropriations to revenue. So the only thing you're dealing with when, with balancing the budget is unrestricted general funds. So with that in mind, where have we been? This slide is a quick summary of what I'm going to cover, but I'm going to discuss it as I go onto the slides. You probably all recognize this graph. This is our unrestricted general fund revenue and budget history from FY76 to the governor's FY21 budget, and then a projection of revenue provided by the Department of Revenue for the next 9 or so years out to FY29. The green shaded area is what's termed the traditional UGF revenue. It's our oil revenue and our oil taxes and our every other unrestricted general fund source we've had historically. The purple you will see here is the new use of the permanent fund. It's our percent of market value, or what we call the POMV. And then the bars represent appropriations or the budget throughout the years. The bottom bar being the dark blue is agency operations. The lighter blue is statewide items, and the yellow being the capital budget. This pink salmon color is what we have termed net fund transfers. It is the net of transfers to savings and or from savings or to other accounts within the treasury that typically are not really considered expenditures but transfers within the budget. Does that make sense? They still require an appropriation, however. Briefly going over the past, you can see in the 80s when the pipeline came on, revenue spiked along with appropriations. We had considerable surpluses, which then, as prices declined, we had this long-term flat trend and a flat budget. And then you all probably remember 07, 06, 08, when oil prices spiked and we had a tax regime change to ACEs. Our revenue spiked and we had some volatility, and then we reached our latest peak, which was in FY12, where we have plummeted basically since then to FY16. At that time, UGF was 9.5 billion in FY12, the revenue, and by FY16 it had dropped to 4.4 billion. I'm sorry, 1.5 billion. The budget was at 7.8 billion and it declined to 4.4 billion, sorry. So you can see over this time, the last few years, we've been operating in a considerable deficit. The average has been $2.6 billion. We have a large spike right here, which was also contributed by this one-time appropriation from the CBR to retirement to address the unfunded liability. And the timing was actually great, and it's turned out well. But to the present, we have been dealing with these. We've decreased the deficit considerably. But now we're in the FY21 proposed budget where the governor has built in a $1.5 billion deficit. You'll see kind of an interesting with the purple here, the shaded area. This was when the POMV started in FY19. These are net of the dividends. Nothing on this slide is related to the permanent fund dividend except for this adjustment of revenue. So the revenues of the general fund here is net of dividends in FY19. You can see it was roughly, is that $2 billion? And assuming the governor's budget, it decreases considerably, and there's $1 billion approximately going to the general fund. And then the out years, we're not assuming anything for the dividend because that's to be determined. So, as you all know, how did we fill those deficits? We used our budget reserves, the CBR and SBR, the Constitutional Budget Reserve, and the Statutory Budget Reserve. During the high oil years and high revenue years, the legislature is often accused of spending only, when in fact they had made considerable savings to the Constitutional Budget Reserve. We paid off the liability, we put money in the SBR, and that helped us build this balance to over $16 billion. And it has helped us weather this storm. And you can see how we have declined significantly to where we are today in a projected FY20 balance of roughly $2.3 billion. And assuming the governor's budget would be approximately $800 million left at the end of FY21.
Got a question, Mr. Carpenter, Representative Knopf.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Rob, before you get too far, if you go back to Mr. Carpenter, if you go back to the first slide, I'm curious about, I'm not exactly sure in my mind, so since 17, when we haven't followed the statutory payout for the PFD, and am I correct in thinking that all permanent fund distributions prior to 17 was made outside the budget documents, and since 17, 18, 19, have we paid them inside the budget documents? Is that expense reflecting them?
Through the chair, Representative Knopf, I wouldn't say we paid them outside the budget documents, but this particular document, they are not addressed.
They are not addressed.
So, yes, sir. So The appropriations have always occurred. We've always accounted for them in our budget reports. Historically, they were accounted for as other fund spending, and since the passage of SB 26 and the use of the percent of market value, we've reclassified that as unrestricted general funds.
But not reflected in your chart?
Not reflected in this chart, that's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Wood.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The black bar that says CBR to retirement, which is only comes up that one time, that would be a fund transfer as well. Am I correct? And does that amount of that CBR to retirement, does that also go into the red bar as a transfer out of CBR as well? So like doubly counted, sort of.
Through the chair, Representative Wool, the appropriation to the retirement funds were, even though it's technically a transfer of money, due to the nature that it is forever off limits to the legislature, we consider it an actual expenditure of money, even though it's transferring between funds within the treasury. But that money is now obligated to pay future retirement benefits, so it's out of the hands of the legislature. So that's why we count it as an appropriation or expenditure. It is included down below to show the additional. I could have made another, like a black part of this lower level, just to show that it's included down here. But it did contribute to the decline in the CBR that year.
Follow up. So that's why that red bar is particularly long, because it also includes the black of CBR to retirement transfer.
That's correct.
Okay, thanks.
And you can, excuse me, you can see that year was it dropped from 15 billion down to roughly 10, a pretty big drop, which accounted for the deficit plus the additional 2.3 billion was added, for a total of 3. Okay, so now we will go over some recent history as to what happened last session. This slide briefly sums up what I'm going to talk about, but I will proceed. Last session was challenging and convoluted. It's hard to follow what has happened, so we've provided this report from our budget system to try and show the progression of the budget from FY19 to where you ended last session. So at the beginning of session, the governor introduced a Walker placeholder budget, but by February he produced his full budget, amended budget, which had a $980 million approximate reduction from FY19. And throughout session, by the end of session, the legislature had accepted $146 million of those proposed reductions. Then the governor proceeded to veto $205 million of this. By the way, this is all agency operations and statewide operations. It doesn't include the capital budget. Okay. He vetoed another $205 million for a total of reduction from FY19 of $351 million. That's what the FY20 budget is compared to FY19, down by $351 million. On the dividend, if you remember, FY19 was approximately $1 billion, which provided a $1,600 dividend, and the governor introduced his full statutory dividend, which required another $992 million. That directly offset his proposed reduction of $980 million to the operating budget, essentially a one-for-one. In the end, you all appropriated a virtually identical dividend to FY19 of $1,606, just over $1 billion to do that.
Got a question, Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, Mr. Carpenter, on the previous page, a couple quick questions. One is, you show legislative cuts of $146 million. I have some memory of a sort of a walking around figure of $190 million from conference. Do you know the reason for that difference?
Through the chair, Representative Jefferson, $190 million in conference committee? Like
at the close of conference committee.
Close of conference committee. I can't say I know that answer. Do you have something? At least you'll provide.
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, to provide some additional information. The legislative cuts column is comparing to what was appropriated. So the appropriations column also includes additional legislation that you guys passed with fiscal notes. So the 146 is netting that those items.
Follow up?
The 351, which is sort of a trued up cut through today, as I understand it, we'll know what the actual reduction is when supplementals come in. Is that, and we sort of have a sense of that, but if they're in the range of 250, then of course there's always a supplemental of some sort, but does that mean we should think of our having cut about $100 million?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, yes, it will depend on what supplementals are put forward on February 4th. We'll have a better idea of what the actual spend for FY20 is.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Please proceed.
So that takes us to where we are now. The previous slide went through FY20. We have added the FY21 governor's budget onto this slide. If you recall, it was a cut of 351 going into FY20, and the governor's proposed FY21 budget adds back $178 million through a combination of increments and decrements. In addition, he again proposed the full statutory PFD, which requires another $865 million over the FY20 budget, be approximately $3,100 per Alaskan that's eligible. Moving on to this slide, this is the major UGF changes from FY20 in the governor's FY21 budget, and I'm going to let ask Lacey to speak to this.
Got a quick question, Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Carpenter, going back to the previous slide, the governor proposes an increase of $865 million to pay the, quote, full statutory PFD. Is it now, does it continue to be his official proposal to do a back pay from last year as well? And that number is not reflected in here. Am I correct? And I don't know if that's still the position or not.
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, I don't know if that's the position or not either. He had a bill last year. You'd have to ask OMB whether that's still their position.
Thank you.
And Representative Ortiz, just to clarify a little more, so in prior statements and I believe the media, the governor had mentioned that he would like to pay what was shorted, what he believed was shorted last year, which was $1,400. And so your question is that included in this budget? And to my understanding, it is not. So.
Thank you.
Please proceed.
Chair Foster, I am going to walk through the next slide. Could you advance it? Which is the, for the record, this is Lacey Sanders of Legislative Finance Division. The slide before you is the major UGF changes from FY20 management plan to FY20 gov. This is a comparison of those columns. The highlighted colors highlight the either lower or larger reductions or higher increases throughout the graph. I'm going to start at the top with the Department of Corrections. The Department of Corrections UGF change is an increase of about $52 million unrestricted general funds. That consists of the following items: $17.8 million for a contract to send prisoners to an out-of-state facility, a reduction of $16.7 million for the closure of the Palmer Correctional Center. This funding was added last year by the legislature and the Palmer Correctional Center has not been opened at this point. It also includes an approximate increase of $30 million related to the projections that on inmate population for HB 49 and a reduction of power cost equalization endowment funds that were utilized for the HB 49 fiscal notes last year. That money is being replaced with unrestricted general funds. For the Department of Education and Early Development, the total change is a reduction of about $20 million. However, the overall increase for K through 12 foundation formula is increased by $19 million. It is divided between public school trust funds, which is a $9 million increase, and $10 million in general funds. As you recall, there was a one-time appropriation in FY20 for $30 million. The budget reflects that funding being removed, as well as the removal of $5 million for pre-K grants. Lastly, there is an increase of general funds by $4.6 million, which I slightly referenced earlier, and it has to do with a fund source change regarding public school trust funds in their agency operations. The governor's budget proposes to utilize all of that funding in the K-12 foundation formula and not in agency operations. Moving on to the Department of Health and Social Services, their total increase is approximately $134 million. Of that, $128 million is restoring reductions that were made to Medicaid. This does include $8.3 million for adult dental. There's a $7.4 million increase for adult public assistance to reduce the reduction that was made last session associated with the maintenance of effort methodology. There is a $5 million increase for the Pioneer Homes as they continue to true up their numbers. And $11.4 million fund source change from unrestricted general funds to the Marijuana Education Treatment Funds, which are also known as the MET funds. There's been an increase in available revenue. If there are no questions on HESS, I'll move on to the Department of Public Safety. Excuse me. They have an increase of approximately $12.8 million. The most significant change is $10.3 million and 36 new positions to increase trooper capacity. There is an increase for approximately $900,000 and 7 additional positions for the new Anchorage Emergency Communication Center, and $1 million increase to address staffing needs and address the backlog in their lab services. The university includes a reduction of $25 million. This was based on a multi-year compact agreement between the governor and the university and is allocated as follows. Approximately $9.5 million to the University of Anchorage, $13.75 million to the University of Fairbanks, and $1.75 million in statewide services. Under statewide items, which includes items such as debt service and retirement, debt service has a change of a reduction of about $15 million due to two things. One is an increase of $10.6 million for general obligation bond payments, and a decrease of $27 million due to the removal of funding that was included in the budget last session for oil and gas tax credit bond debt service payments. An item to note is that there is no funding for the purchase of tax credits in the governor's bill this year, or for the debt service payment. Retirement system payments increased overall $37.6 million. This is an increase of $44.5 million to the PERS system and a reduction of $6.2 million to the TERS system. That brings the total agency operations and statewide items that Mr. Carpenter referenced earlier to an increase of $178 million. The governor's budget proposes a full statutory dividend requiring a total of $2 billion in FY21. This is an increase over the prior year of $865 million. And the total increase in the budget is just over $1 billion.
Thank you, Ms. Sanders. Two quick things. First, can we get a copy of the breakdown that you mentioned for everything? Thank you. And then the second thing is adjustments, for example, automatic salary increases, one-time increments. Those were all, well, of course, one-time increments wouldn't be included, but salaries and all those things would be included in the governor's budget, correct?
Chair Foster, yes, those would be all included in through in this difference, yes.
Thank you. Representative Carpenter? Oh, thank you. Any other questions, Representative Josephson?
Yeah, through the chair, for any of our fiscal analysts, just as a reminder on the tax credit issue, very big picture, we went from historically paying everything that was submitted as a certificate to, there was 1 year, I think FY16, where we paid somewhere around the range of 2/7 or some substantial part, but it may have been 200 out of 700 million, or I have some memory of something like that. But then we were playing sort of the 10% game. And then now what we're saying is under our power of appropriation, we're just not going to pay anything. And is it still, as to your understanding, pending the litigation on the bond package? Is that sort of where we are?
Ms. Sanders?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, yes, that is still pending. To follow back around to your initial question, the legislature does have the power of appropriation. This is the governor's proposal. I was just noting that the governor's proposal does not include anything at this time.
I understand.
Representative Sullivan Leonard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Sanders, would you please go over the statewide description there when you talked about PERS and TERS as far as how much went into each and just a little more detail on that?
Through the chair, Representative Sullivan Leonard, the total retirement change and what we call state state assistance to retirement increased $37.6 million. That was initially projected to be higher. It is a $44.5 million increase to PERS and a $6.2 million reduction to TERS. And I'm going to turn this over to Rob to explain the changes that that were made to the retirement.
Sure. Through the chair, Representative Sullivan Leonard, there was, I don't know every detail about this, there was recent adjustments to the state, you know, from the actuary dropping the assumed rate of churn for PERS from 8% to 7.38%, which causes an additional liability to the state. However, offsetting that was unusually large gains on the health insurance side, which they've kind of netted out to decrease the increase considerably from over $200 million, I believe it was, to where we are at around $40 million now.
And follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Follow-up.
With regard to TERS, you said it's a reduction of $6.2 million, and what was the cause of that? I guess that's what I'm looking for.
Again, through the chair, the gains on the health insurance side were fairly large and offset the increases on the pension side. And I don't exactly know why TERS went down versus PERS going up. I think it's mostly the size of the difference of the two plans.
Thank you.
Representative Wool.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just, you went over some numbers on Department of Corrections. I just want to make sure I heard you correctly. 17.8 million was additional expenditure for sending prisoners out of state, and 16 million was the cost savings from closing the Palmer Correction Center. So almost a wash there.
Through the chair, Representative Bull, correct.
Okay, follow up. Do you know the head count of prisoners out and Palmer Correction Center being closed?
Through the chair, Representative Wool, it is my understanding that there are very few prisoners currently outside. Those that are outside currently have medical conditions. The Department of Corrections is in the process of issuing a RFP that has not been finalized. It's in the procurement process, so there is no current large contract for inmates to be out of state at this time. I did check on prisoner capacity this morning. It's approximately 97% capacity, and that is with Palmer not being open at this time.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Carpenter.
Point of order. This is an overview. Will the committee be diving deeper into each one of these issues as the session progresses?
We, at the discretion of the, if the full committee is wanting these things, we can definitely get into those deeper.
And both of those issues, I think, are on the mind of the public, the education and prisoners issue, and then the Department of Corrections situation that we have. I would hope that we can dive a little deeper into those.
Thank you, Representative Carpenter. You're absolutely correct. This is a big issue, and we haven't fully planned out the session, but I think it's duly noted that we do need to give this a little more time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Knopp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Sanders, in Department of Corrections, the $16 million, I think, that's what we appropriated last year for open the Palmer Correctional Facility, which never happened. So really what the administration's requesting is that we just reappropriate that to contractual services, out-of-state contractual services. Is that what they're proposing there?
Through the chair, Representative Knopp, the governor's budget requests a reduction of that money in Palmer Correctional Center and then an increase, a separate increase for out-of-state. Yes.
Thank you.
Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, sticking with the Palmer question, it sounds like the legislature was effective in constraining that allocation to Palmer, although they must be using it, I assume, in other population management ways, but they are unable, for example, if the RFP issued, well, it has issued, if a contract was completed, they would be constrained by the manner in which we wrote the FY20 budget and could not, the contract would just sit there. Am I right about that?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, the Department of Corrections is not utilizing the funding that was appropriated by the legislature last year for the purposes of opening the Palmer Correctional Center. The language in the bill was specifically designated for that purpose. Any work that would be completed for an RFP to move inmates out of state would have to be utilized using other funding.
So how could the department possibly be getting by, even if it maximized its other facilities and didn't reopen Palmer Correctional Center? How it must be in dire need of that $16 million.
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, I don't want to speak for the Department of Corrections. I think that's an excellent question for them. As I mentioned earlier, the current capacity within all of the systems for the correctional centers is at 97%. So they, and that includes not opening the Palmer Correctional Center.
And for anyone else who is interested in this issue, the subcommittee will be meeting on, Department of Corrections will be meeting next week, having its first meeting, and that'll be a big topic. So any further questions? Seeing none, please proceed.
Mr. Chairman, Rob Carpenter again. If I could address the oil and gas tax credit issue a little more, I have had some discussions with the Department of Revenue, and they are expecting, I think this court case has been, an answer has been, is forthcoming. I'm not sure the terminology the court system is using, but it's supposed to be forthcoming, and I believe that they're anticipating still issuing tax credit bonds. At least they're considering it, and I wouldn't be surprised if there was an amendment or something from the governor adding that money. Okay, moving on, we have provided here a short fiscal summary, shortened. Our other one is quite detailed but provides a lot of really good information. This one is more abbreviated. What this provides is a comparison of FY20 to 21. Again, this is unrestricted general funds and also includes all funds. I'll just go over this really briefly. $5.1 billion revenue in 20, $5 billion in 21. Appropriations were 5.5. They've gone up to 6.5 here in FY21, primarily as a result of the dividend. and that $178 million that Lacey talked about. The main point here, I guess, is the bottom line number that's circled in red, which is a $1.5 billion fiscal deficit. So what does that mean? This graph is commonly known as the swoop graph. Given its shape, it kind of swoops upwards, swoops downwards. What this really does is highlight where the money goes, where the unrestricted general fund goes. This is a listing by budget category or budget component of the unrestricted general funds, where they are in each agency, starting with the smallest to the largest. And it compares FY20 in red to FY21 in the blue bars. So as you can see, the largest increase is to the dividend, and you'll see add backs for health and social services and the statewide items and corrections, all the things that Lacey just mentioned. The brackets here are included to show the magnitude of the deficit, to really provide the concept of how much money you're dealing with. Starting from the smallest agency and going to the largest, it would take a reduction of 16 agencies, including part of the Department of Corrections, to close that $1.5 billion deficit. Or if you started from the largest budget component, it would eliminate all but $500 million to the dividend program. And again, this is only to provide perspective. So now we're going to move forward into FY20 supplementals and a term that's called the CBR headroom, which you probably have all heard of. As a refresher, let's go over the CBR, how the CBR is used for balancing the budget and what the headroom is. In recent years, CBR has been used for balancing the budget, but has been limited to the appropriation bills passed in that particular session. So last session, CBR access was granted to balance the budget, but only for the bills that were passed last session, meaning that any future appropriations were not eligible. However, I qualify that with that there was a headroom provision provided up to $250 million of future appropriations that can be accessed with a simple majority vote. So, for FY20, the governor in his 12/15 budget release identified what he termed a likely supplementals. These were, he has no official release or request for them, but he's identified them as they're coming. And those were the $120 million for Medicaid, $5 million for Pioneers Homes, $6 million for the Alaska Psychiatric Institute, and $94.5 million for fire suppression. Ledge Finance has identified a few other areas where we foresee probable supplementals in addition to these likely supplementals the governor identified, and that was $8.3 million for adult dental, $7.5 million for public assistance, and an additional amount to fire suppression for the spring fires, which typically there's some amount included for those. We're guesstimating for a total of $102.5 million. We threw in an item the governor included in his budget for redistricting, $2.5 million. That was his only actual supplemental request so far. And then if you deemed community assistance a priority, we put that in there to give a total potential supplemental of $281 million, which would be beyond your headroom by approximately $31 million. Now, this isn't the end of the world. It just means that there's potential for a need of an additional three-quarter vote.
Representative LeBong.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Regarding the community assistance, there was a community assistance piece in the last budget. Is that correct?
Through the chair, in the FY20 budget, the governor vetoed it, the $30 million. So going into FY 21, if there's no further action, there'll be a payout of one-third of the remaining balance, which is $60 million, so the payout would be $20
million. So this is a return to the funding that was vetoed?
Yes, sir.
And this is your sense that it's going to be placed into the supplemental? You're anticipating, or?
Through the chair, Representative LeBon, it was more a providing the picture if it was chosen to be included, this is what it would look like.
So you don't know that it's going to be included?
No, sir.
Okay, thank you.
I'd also like to recognize that we were joined earlier by Representative Stutes. Thanks for joining us. And I don't see anybody else out there. Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know it's an overview. Do we have an understanding of whether any of that fire suppression cost is going to be or potentially reimbursable by the federal government, or is the Fed portion already taken out of the total fire cost this year?
Through the chair, this is just the state portion. However, Alexi might have more to add on that.
For the record, Alexi Painter, Legislative Finance Division. Representative Carpenter, through the chair, the $94.5 million that has already been spent is just the unrestricted general fund portion after federal reimbursements. The additional $8 million that we added is based on basically a long-term average of the spring costs for UGF only. There may be an additional federal cost, but the language in the budget provides essentially unlimited federal authority for fire suppression, so that would not need to be a supplemental. But yes, it does include the federal reimbursements that have already happened.
Thank you.
Representative Josephson and then Wolf.
The chair, Mr. Carpenter, the community assistance, when in late July we managed the three-quarter vote, completed it, didn't community assistance flow from the reverse sweep of the PCE? There was, in the end, some community assistance.
So, go ahead.
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, I think there may be some confusion on what happens with the PCE fund. So PCE funds can be utilized to be deposited into community assistance. The community assistance fund. One third of the balance flows out, but if you don't replenish the fund, the balance is diminished for the following year. So at this time, we have a lower balance than the full $90 million. And we have until this year, the end of this fiscal year, FY20, to bring the balance back up to 90 for that distribution to be the full amount.
That was the Senator Hoffman amendment from several years ago. But I thought one of you said that community assistance had been vetoed.
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, the deposit into the fund last session was vetoed by the governor.
Representative Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to go back to the deficit of $1.5 billion on page 14, I guess it was. So $1 billion or a little over $1 billion comes from the additional appropriation for the PFD. There's $178 million in the budget items that from this year compared to last year. What's the other sort of $300 million an additional deficit come from? Like, doesn't jump right out at me. Or
For the record, Alexi Painter, Legislative Finance Division. Representative Wolf through the chair. Last year, if you look at the pre-transfer deficit line on line 16, that's really sort of the normal picture of our deficit. So last year we had a $350 million deficit, not including supplementals. However, we had direct appropriations from the Constitutional Budget Reserve and Statutory Budget Reserve that show up as fund transfers to help pay for that. So really, if you're doing a year-to-year comparison, there was a substantial deficit last year so we're adding on to that with the billion and $178 million. The SBR is now completely expended, so that fund source is no longer available. And the governor's budget does not directly appropriate from the CBR, it just uses it as a deficit filler. So that shows up all in line 19 as the post-transfer deficit rather than line 16, the pre-transfer deficit. That makes sense.
Part of the answer also be we've got a shortfall in revenue For example, petroleum revenue is down by $187 million. Would that be correct?
Representative Foss, or you are the chair, yes. That's correct. Petroleum revenue is down about $150 million. The POMV draw is up. That roughly offsets that, so revenue is fairly flat overall. We show it is down $100 million, but that difference is really a lot of that is the carry forward and then the our reclassification of royalties. So really revenue is pretty much flat between FY20 and FY21.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Painter. I'm looking on page slide 14 under revenue here for FY20. It says 5.5, and you just mentioned this is down by $100 million. But then you said it was still kind of flat, but that being down $100 million still figures into part of the reason. It accounts for part of that $300 million nevertheless. Is that right?
Representative Foster, through the chair, $73 million of that is royalties above 25% that were appropriated to the permanent fund. We reclassified those as designated general fund this year. In FY20, they were considered unrestricted general fund. So there was an offsetting appropriation down here in line 14. So that $73 million did not contribute to the deficit. This year, to try to avoid confusion, although perhaps we didn't completely, we reclassified it to designated general fund because there is a statutory designation that those royalties should go to the permanent fund.
Representative Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So back to the $300 million, and I just want to make sure I sort of understand this. The CBR transfer last year was that $346 million. This year, this CBR transfer hasn't been sort of appropriated. Is that sort of left over from last year in that when you take money out of the CBR, you sort of still owe it? Or is it, I guess.
Representative Wolf through the chair. So last year, we, rather than just using the CBR as a deficit filler, we directly appropriated the capital budget from the CBR, meaning that it shows up as a fund transfer from the CBR rather than just deficit filler, which would come out in this line.
Okay.
And so this year, the governor is not proposing to directly fund the capital budget from the CBR, so there's no sort of fund transfer from the CBR. And the same thing had happened with the dividend last year. A portion of the dividend came directly from the statutory budget reserve, and that shows up as a fund transfer. So really, the comparable numbers to use would be line 16, the pre-transfer deficit, before we sort of move money around to try to pay for the budget. And that's where you see that there was a deficit of $350 million that's increasing to about $1.5 billion this year.
Follow-up. So the difference in deficit is closer to 1.1 or 1.2, which is what we had before, which is basically the PFD difference, which is about 0.9 or something like that, or and the 178. Is that correct? Okay, thanks.
And Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm probably the only one in the room that hasn't quite figured this one out yet. But going back to that $30 million for community assistance, was $30 million distributed to communities throughout the state for community assistance or not in this last budget cycle or in this current budget cycle?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, there's a difference between a deposit into the fund and a distribution to communities. In FY20, there was a $30 million distribution to communities because that was based on the prior year's balance. Moving forward in FY21, if the balance is not brought up, there will not, by depositing an additional $30 million, there will not be a $30 million distribution.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm sorry.
And if I can briefly add, that we have a white paper on our website explaining how the community assistance appropriations and flows work, because it is pretty complex and confusing, and I'd recommend people who want further information to read that.
Yeah, I feel better about that. I'm glad that it requires a white paper, so I'm thank you.
I'm going to take a little step off on the cliff here and make an attempt to explain that. My understanding is it's fairly simple, which was you've got this pot of money, you make deposits into it, and then each year one-third of that gets paid out. And so if the balance was $90 million, then you would pay out one-third of that in 1 year, which would be $30 million to all the communities. And if $30 million was not included in the deposit last year, now your total is $60 million that's in this fund. And one-third of $60 million is $20 million. So last year, the full $30 million would have been paid out to everybody because the veto is after the fact. So going forward in this next year, it'll be one-third of $60 million, so $20 million will get paid out. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Foster, yes, unless there is an additional deposit made this year before the close of the fiscal year.
Thank you. Representative Josephson.
Thank you, through the chair. On the question on page 17 of adult public assistance, so my office prepared something, I'm sure you've got a version of it, that showed what was vetoed in House Bill 39, what was re-vetoed in 2001. And my documents show that adult public assistance was vetoed twice last year. And so I guess what I'm curious about is, did it require a plan amendment? And is that why, I mean, I thought the governor's proposal, successful through his sort of lens, was to just end this program. And so why are we getting receipts? Why do we think there's a supplemental need when the program should have ended?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, there's two things. My understanding is there's two reasons why we have it now back before us. The governor's budget and the vetoes that followed with the funding for that program were based on moving the program back to the 1983 payment standard with the Social Security Administration. While the Federal Social Security Administration was approving that change going back, which would have saved $7.4 million, they identified a error in the calculation that was going back to 1995, I believe. And once that recalculation was completed, it was determined that the changes in the income or in the assistance that would be provided to individuals was too low, and therefore the governor has decided that that program will now be continued at the original program, which is why he's asking for additional money in his budget bring that program back up to the full amount.
Follow up. So the net result is, in that respect, it parallels with adult dental. The administration has said we're just going to restore these programs the way they were in FY19, essentially.
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, yes, he is requesting to restore those programs.
Representative Knopf.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, boy, the more we talk, the more confusing we make this. So I guess I'm curious. So the $30 million to community revenue sharing simply brings it up for the FY20 budget cycle to pay out the $30 million. So you did say, Lacey, that, in fact, he did put additional money in for the FY21 budget. Did the governor request $30 million in his budget for the FY21 community revenue sharing program?
Through the chair, Representative Knopf, yes, the governor did put an additional deposit into the fund. It's coming from the Power Cost Equalization and Endowment Fund based on the formula that is in statute. However, there is still a year that has been skipped now. So FY20 does not have that deposit.
That's correct, and so now we're on the same page again. So if we do not appropriate this $30 million to keep FY20 whole and let it slide, we really end up with, what, $70 million for a balance in FY21 year, or is it $80 million? It's less than 90. Is that fair to say?
Representative Knopf, through the chair. So at the end of FY20, there would be $60 million, meaning there would be a $20 million distribution. And then after that $20 million distribution, the governor adds $28 million, not $30 million. So the distribution FY22 would be about $23 million. So not the full distribution, but higher than the FY21 distribution.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. Sanders and then Representative LeBlanc.
May I just clarify something really quickly based on something I said earlier to Representative Josephson? When we were talking about the adult public assistance, it was a separate change that Centers for Medicaid and Medicaid Services was reviewing. So there was two pieces. There was the Social Security Administration and the CMS. So I misspoke earlier when I said they found, which entity found the error.
Representative LeBlanc.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Ms. Sanders, the power cost equalization is an endowment of sorts, not a pure endowment. So the earnings of the power cost equalization annual draw is what, approximately 4 to 5%? Is that a fair statement?
Representative LeBlanc through the chair. So the statute sets up, and this is where it gets a little complex, and I'd say probably reading the white paper is easier than me trying to explain it now, but essentially the cost of the power cost equalization program is paid for first, and then of the remaining earnings from the previous year, we can spend 70% of those earnings. So the earnings were high enough that 70% of the earnings after paying for the PCE program leaves about $28 million for community assistance, and that's what the governor is proposing in FY21. So we don't spend all of the earnings, but the statute specifies 70%. So it's not based on a percent of market value or anything like that. It's an earnings-based endowment model.
Follow-up. So if it falls short, there's a supplemental amount placed into the program to make sure that the draw meets expectations for the program?
Representative LeBlanc through the chair, the statute says that regardless of earnings, the full amount can be appropriated for PCE. So even if they earn nothing, they can fully fund the PCE program. It's only if there's earnings beyond what's needed for PCE that it could go to community assistance or other programs.
Thank you.
And just to follow up on that, so I just want to summarize. It sounds like if we don't do anything, then we would be short the $30 million that was vetoed last year, plus going forward, the excess that will be available from PCE funds will be about, you said it was at 25 or 28?
28.
28, okay, so then we'd be short the 30 plus the 2, correct. And then the other thing I just wanted to mention is for folks who are wondering why we're talking about PCE and the connection to community assistance, for folks who might be watching on Gavel here, is a few years ago, legislation changed the PCE payout so that, first of all, it used to be just the PCE program would pay to communities for PCE, and then legislation was added to also allow whatever excess the earnings of that fund had that paid beyond what was needed for PCE to go toward renewable energy as well as community assistances. Do I have that correct? Okay. So I just wanted to FYI. Any further questions? Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The API $6 million likely request, is that for capital improvements or operational?
Through the chair, Representative Wohl, that is for operationals. That's the contract that they're continuing with Wellspring. Correct. Or WellPath. Thank you.
Okay.
It's operational.
And
follow up.
So my understanding, that's $1 million a month. Wasn't that the contract or?
The chair, Representative Wohl, we do have Kelly Cunningham, who's our health and social services analyst.
Yeah, and I know we'll get into this later. I just saw it there, so I figured I'd ask about it. But so it's not for like any sort of building improvements or new doors or windows or anything like that.
Through the chair, Representative Wohl, no, it is. My understanding, it's for operations.
Representative Wohl, through the chair, one thing to add is there is a request in the governor's FY21 capital budget for capital improvements to API, but that's not part of the supplemental need.
Please proceed.
Okay, Rob Carpenter, Ledge Finance. So now we're at the where are we going stage of the presentation. I believe you're all familiar with this output from our legislative finance fiscal model. I would argue that this is the most important slide I'm presenting today. It provides the big picture of our revenues, our budget, and our reserves from now until FY29. This is the status quo scenario, meaning what would occur given the assumptions if nothing happened from here, and assuming the governor's budget and full statutory dividends, and the, again, the assumptions of the Department of Revenue's revenue forecast, the investment returns from Callan Associates, the state's investment advisor for the permit fund and for our retirement funds, and the inflation rate also assumed by Callan. If you like, I can quickly go through the sections if you're not familiar, but the key takeaway here is right here in red circled, and that over this time period through FY29, we would average $1.8 to $2 billion per year of a fiscal deficit. This is approximately $17 billion over that time span, and that is the issue that you are facing as a legislature. Our policy at Ledge Finance, we are neutral in how you address this, but we can provide, as you know, any number of scenarios using our fiscal model for fiscal improvement, as many of you have come to us. Would you like me to walk through the sections of this, or is that good, Mr. Chair?
Please do, and maybe I just want to focus on what you just said, which is the main takeaway, and the budgets, or I'm sorry, the deficits. So according to this FY21, you've got a $1.5 billion deficit, according to the budget that's been proposed, and we've got $2 billion in the CBR. I believe the prior page that you have on here mentions how soon we would drain the CBR down if we were to continue with this, and that, I believe, is if you could maybe talk a little more about when that would be.
Sure, Mr. Chairman. Okay, so as you explained, the CBR is roughly, if we go back a slide, assuming these supplementals, we would end FY20 at roughly $2 billion right here. Assuming those supplementals continuing on with the governor's FY21 budget, it would be approximately $500 million ending FY21. So this section of the graph is our budget reserves. It shows the CBR on the bottom with the ERA in the green bars. The CBR would be drained in FY22. And we are assuming that the ERA is used to balance the budget on an ad hoc basis from here on out. That assumption is because there's no other way to pay for the budget in this scenario. It's not saying that's what would happen. This is just what the scenario forecasts. And up here, you would see these bars represent the portions of the budget and the revenue associated with it. So you have the traditional UGF revenue. You have the POMB payout in green. And then you have use of the CBR in orange, and then you have the red bars would be the ERA filling the remainder of the budget over this time span.
Sorry, does your little pointer work?
Oh, I'm sorry. There we go. Okay. Should I go over that whole thing again? All right. Sorry. Okay, so this upper area is the UGF revenue and budget, and it shows that the blue bars are the traditional revenue that we collect, the green being the POMV payout to the general fund, the orange is use of the CBR until it's gone, and the remainder of the deficit being filled with the ERA in the red bars. And you will see as the ERA is utilized, the budget reserves chart, the bars start to decline as you consume the earnings reserve account. Also, you'll see down here in the orange that the CBR is gone by FY22.
And Mr. Carpenter, the ERA would be gone by what year?
Sure, Mr. Chairman, in this scenario, it would be gone by FY30.
Thank you. Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Carpenter, looking at the upper left-hand section there, UGF revenue budget, under the blue revenue projected out to increase slightly, is that assuming anything about increased production, more oil going into the pipeline? How volatile is that blue bar projection?
Sure, Mr. Chairman. Representative Ortiz, this scenario assumes the Department of Revenue's fall forecast, so their oil price projection and their production projection. We can change production or price if you'd like to see that in a different scenario, but this is assuming what they have forecast for the next 10 years.
So suffice it to say that that's a pretty volatile section of the revenue based on anything can happen in relationship to big spikes or big decreases in prices anyway.
Absolutely, Representative Ortiz. You know, that's one thing that I think it's overlooked in this model. We really don't know what's even going to happen next year. So to forecast 10 years is it's highly improbable that this would actually occur. But we have to make assumptions and forecast based on those assumptions. And given the assumptions input here, this is what would happen if it all came to be.
Thank you.
Representative Johnston and then Wolf.
Yes, through the chair. In this model, do you assume the reduction in earning capacity as far as the ERA?
Through the chair, Representative Johnston, yes, we do.
Thank you.
Representative Wool and then Josephson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I guess I have two kind of questions. Representative Ortiz mentioned revenue. It looks like on your chart, 2019 is sort of the high water mark, and even 10 years out, the blue bar won't reach what it is in 2019, if I'm not mistaken, right? So last year was a good year, and we won't get that year, even 10 years out, according to the projections of Department of Revenue.
Right? Through the chair, Representative Wall, that's correct.
Okay, that doesn't bode very well. I guess my other part of the question is CBR balance at $500 million on page 17. That is based on the bulk of that is a withdrawal to pay a full PFD. Is that because if there's $2 billion now and we're going to go down by $1.5 billion, the 1.1 or so is full PFD, and the rest of it am I getting that assessment correctly?
Through the chair, you're correct, Representative.
Okay, so follow up. If we do this, and we end up with $500 million in the CBR, then this is the last time we will be pulling out of the CBR to pay any kind of budget deficit. I mean, not the last time we'll be pulling it out, but the last time that it's sufficient to sort of solve our fiscal problems.
Through the chair, that is correct. FY 21 would be the last year it would fully fund the budget.
Okay, thanks.
The deficit in the budget.
So that's this the year the budget we're working on now.
Correct.
Okay.
Representative Josephson, then Johnston, and then LeBron.
Through the chair, Mr. Carpenter, the upper left-hand chart there where you said it's hard enough to know what FY21 will look like, let alone FY29. But you didn't say this, of course, but I think in some ways when legislators, this is my view, play the uncertainty sort of vision, then we're tying our hands, because what I see here is something that's really not speculative, in that we know that shale is there and that oil prices are not likely to come up above $120, which brings real revenue. We know the CBR is largely gone. We know that short of a supergiant in Anwar, for example, there isn't going to be a doubling of production. So I look at this and I say the facts are sort of in, and it's just they're just a number of important policy calls now. Is that that's another reasonable interpretation?
Through the chair, Representative Joseph, that's absolutely correct. I mean, these are the assumed projections from all the professionals in the state of Alaska. The Department of Revenue has given you their revenue forecast, the best to their real ability. The Permanent Fund Corporation has given you their earnings projection on their assets to the best of their ability using their investment advisors. We've assumed an inflation rate that's agreed upon by most people. Whether these things all materialize is unknown, but giving these assumed projections, this is our best guess of what would happen. And I mean, I'll leave it at that.
Representative Johnston?
Yes, and this might be a little bit to the weeds, but currently our CBR is our cash management fund.
Through the chair, yes.
And what kind of assumptions do we make to the cost of not having a cash management fund in this, or is that too granular?
Through the chair, Representative Johnston, I'm not sure we've assumed the cost associated with cash management. I know there are policies in place for cash management using the ERA, earnings reserve account, when the CBR, were the CBR to be emptied or not be sufficient for cash management purposes.
And a follow-up?
Follow-up.
Then back to the earnings, taking into account the earnings from the ERA, then becoming a cash management, you've taken into account that we have to maintain a liquidity as a fund balance.
Through the chair, Representative Johnston, I'm not sure we've built in that level of detail, but typically the ERA has a certain cash balance at all times anyway, a considerably large one, I believe, to where it could handle some cash flows issues the state of Alaska might have. So I'm not sure there would be a significant enough impact, other than declining balances has a huge impact on earnings power.
Thank you.
Representative LeBon and then Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was going to follow up on Representative Wohl's comments and also Representative Johnston's about the working capital fund that the CBR represents. In my thinking, that's our bridging cash flow, receipts of revenue and expenditures over the course of a fiscal year. That's our working capital cushion. That's our cash reserve to do business as a state. Any private sector business has to have a working capital reserve. So do you have an opinion about what the minimum amount that should be?
Through the chair, Representative LeBon, I don't know if we have an opinion about what it should be. I know from previous conversations that we've had, the amount utilized is approximately $400 million on an annual basis. Should it be more? Could it be more? Yes. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. It's a hard question to answer. I recognize that follow-up. And the earnings reserve account really is not our working capital reserve account, is it? I mean, that comment was made, but it's really not. I mean, that money is not used by the state or intended to be used by the state for working capital on a month-to-month basis. Is that a true statement?
Through the chair, Representative LeBon, that is correct. The intent of the earnings reserve account is not to be a cash management tool for the state of Alaska's cash flow. It's really not the intent of the CBR either. That's just how we utilize it. Expanding on your comment of what balance the CBR should have in it, beyond cash flow purposes, it serves a purpose as a budget shock absorber. And what that needs to be to annually cover our volatility and our revenue stream is also a question. Does it need to be $1 billion, $1.5, $5 billion?
Yeah, I believe, one last comment, Mr. Chairman, I believe there's a implied understanding among us elected officials that the CBR is our working capital piece, and it's a pretty critical part of doing day-to-day business for the state of Alaska, and that's just more a comment.
And if I could just add, over the years that I've been here, and this is my 10th year, For years, I had heard that the minimum in the CBR should be $1 billion, and more recently, I was hearing the number of $500 million, and then there's the $400 million, and it's just it makes me a little bit nervous. And I think what that number represents, the most updated one, is the absolute minimum. I think maybe the billion was comfortably, it should be probably about $1 billion, but the absolute minimum, my understanding, is probably $400 million. And with that, I think next on the list I had was Representative Wool, and then Johnston, and then, oh, Josephson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So here's a question that comes up a lot, so I figure I'll ask you guys. The projections for revenue, broken down into price and production, is that, you know, everyone talks about the Renaissance on the North Slope and all these new fields coming online. I'm sure Department of Revenue, how, and maybe that's a question for them, but how do they weigh that in? And is that, are those possible increases in production balanced against the projected decreases in other fields? So within that revenue equation, is production and price fairly flat as well, or do you parse it out that far?
For the record, Alexi Painter, Legislative Finance. Representative Wolf, through the chair, the Department of Revenue's price forecast is based on the futures market for FY21, and then is just growing with inflation, so it is essentially a flat real price. For production, they weigh the decline curve. The Department of Natural Resources takes the decline curves for the existing fields and then adds the potential for new fields. But for ones that have not been developed, they do some risking on that, where they reduce the projection because there's some uncertainty about whether the field will actually come online at all, or in the year that we project, or in the full amount we project. So there's a lot of uncertainty that they handle by not including all of the potential production from new fields in the middle forecast. They do have a projection that would show if everything happens perfectly, every proposed field comes online. They also have one that's if none of the new fields come online. So they can show you that whole range, and I think they'll be able to do that tomorrow.
Thank you.
Representative Josephson?
Just a comment, Mr. Chairman, that it's probably in the March-April timeframe, the Treasury officers from the Department of Revenue were here and said their testimony, and I recall it pretty clearly, was that they strongly encouraged us to leave $1.4 billion in the CBR. When we followed up, they said possibly as low as $1.2 billion. I'm very confident that was their testimony.
Thank you. Any further comments or questions? So I think we left off. We'll go to Representative Ortiz, but I think your last question was, would you like us to have you go through all of the components here? I think it would be nice unless the committee feels comfortable with where we're at, but let's go to
Actually,
the question.
Let's just go.
Okay. Any feelings on that? Let's go ahead and do that.
Rob Carpenter, Ledge Finance. So I believe we covered the upper quadrant fairly well and the reserves. As you see down below, this is the forecasted deficits under this scenario. Again, $1.8 billion to $2 billion per year, which if you'll look down farther, this shows a percentage of the budget that would be covered from savings. It's approximately 27% a year, and the amount of unplanned draw from the ERA, the Earnings Reserve Account. So you're looking at $1.9 billion, basically the entire deficit, roughly, that's projected. The upper right box shows the dividend check. Under the status quo and under this scenario, the red being the status quo, a full dividend payment each year according to statute. And again, this scenario follows full dividend payment until it's declining as a result of a declining permanent fund, which this represents the permanent fund balance, this section right here, the red being the total permanent fund growing with inflation from FY20, and the multicolored bar representing this scenario where The purple represents the principal and the green represents the ERA. And as we proceed from withdrawing from the ERA, the total balance declines to where it's basically gone by FY30. The next section down below shows our POMV payout and the split between the general fund and dividends. Under this scenario, you can see that the down below here are actual the split out of numbers that are represented in this graph. The dividends would be $2 billion a year and growing up to 2.3 approximately in the out years, and the amount to the general fund being the remainder, approximately $1 billion. The plan assumes the 5% POMV as it is written in statute right now for FY21 is the last year at 5.25%, and then it drops to 5% from there on. This last line is actually quite interesting. It's the effective percent of market value payout given the 5-year lag in the calculation and a growing balance. The effective payout would always be less than the actual 5%. So you can see here that it's in the early years, it's less than 5%, but then when you start doing the ad hoc draws, it goes considerably larger into the 7-8% payout from the permanent fund. The middle sections are all just the variables.
Representative Wool.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So keeping everything constant except the dividend check, have you guys, have you manipulated that number so that, for example, the effective POMV draw is 4.5 or 5. So manipulating that one number to have, say, zero deficit going forward or effective draw of under 5%. I mean, I guess it's more of an exercise. I just didn't know if, you know.
Representative Wool, through the chair, we've manipulated probably every way this thing could be manipulated. I'm not sure, to your point, if you tried to get it to an effective POMV of 5%, so the planned, the POMV would be much higher, I don't know, 6.25 or something, I'm just guessing here, but at a 5% effective POMV, you would obviously have a larger payout, which would be beneficial to the general fund. Can't tell you whether it would fill the deficit. My guess would be it wouldn't, but I'd have to actually plug it in to see. But I mean, it's a great assumption. If you're assuming 7% return and you want an effective 5% payout, you're still covering your inflation for the most part.
And I believe your office is available for anyone who might want to ask for different scenarios here, and you can produce that for folks. So just a reminder, I believe that's still.
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you. Are there any further questions, Representative Johnston?
And I just want to remind folks that even though working with our finance, ledge finance, it's more accurate, but if you do want to play with different scenarios, you can go to the Permanent Fund Working Group modeling. The problem with using that, you just have to keep in mind it's a point in time, and I think we used on that would be $50 million in supplemental, and it was without our revenue shortfall. So keep that in mind. But if you want to test out some of your ideas, that's also a place you can go, and then go and take it to Ledge Finance.
Any further questions? I don't see any. So with that, any final comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It was a pleasure being here today. I just wanted to put in a last little plug. We've just implemented an email notification system for anything we published on our website, any updated publications, any reports that we post, and you can sign up to subscribe to those notifications.
Thank you. So appreciate the really good information. It's a great overview and good explanation of the governor's budget. If we could get that breakdown, and we'll get that out to members. And so with that, if there is nothing further, thank you to Mr. Carpenter, Ms. Sanders, and Mr. Painter. Our next meeting is scheduled for tomorrow, January 23rd at 1:30 p.m. And at that meeting, we will be hearing presentations on the fall 2019 production, oil production, and revenue forecasts. So with that, we will gavel out at 10:29 a.m. Thank you.